We're on Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Aleph, and we learned yesterday the Mishnah, and now we're going to start the Gemara. Let's just quickly review the principles that underlie this Mishnah. We always said that an Eruv Tchumen has to be made of Mazon Shtei Sudas that are Mutar B'Achila, and the Mishnah now sets up categories of food that are asur, you're not allowed to eat them according to halach, and therefore it cannot serve as an eruv. And we're really going to start getting into some of the issues in Zroim. Every field needs hafroshas trumas of maisrus in Eretz Yisrael, and any fruits or grains that were grown in Eretz Yisrael require hafroshes trumas and maisros. On a doraisa level, we have a principle called chita achas poteres esakri, which means that there's no minimum amount of truma, but midrabanan, you give 1 out of 40, that's called ayin yofa, 1 out of 50 is ayin beninus, 1 out of 60 is ayin ra, is being cheap. Now, what's left after he gives the Kohen his due? Now he has to give the Levi his due, which is called Maaser Rishon, and that's 1/10. Now the Levi, when he receives his Maaser, he has to give what's called Trumas Maaser, and he has to give 1/10 of what he got to the Kohen. And now we go back to the Baal Bayis. He was already Mafrish Truma and Maaser, and fine, whatever left is Heter and it's Chulin, and of course he can eat it, he can use it as an Eruv. Now, let's get back to Maaser Rishon. So the Levi receives his Maaser Rishon, and he sets up another Maaser which he gives to the Kohen. And on the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the Shemitah cycle, instead of Maaser Rishon, just 1 second. Let me go over this one more time. On the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the Shemitah cycle, he gives, in addition to Maaser Rishon, he's Mafrish Maaser Sheni. And that has to be eaten in Yerushalayim. The third and sixth years, he has to give Maaser Ani. Now, before he's Mafrish Trumas and Maaseris, he has what's called Tevel. Tevel is also Bachila. And with regard to Maaser Rishon, before Trumas Maaser was separated, that's also called Tevel. Truma Gedola and Trumas Maaser are allowed to be eaten by Kohanim. If you're not Kohen, then you're not allowed to eat Trumas of Maaser, but Maaser Rishon is given to the Levi, that has the din of Chulin. Anyone is allowed to eat it once the Trumas Maaser has been separated. Maaser Sheni is only allowed to be eaten in Yerushalayim, unless you poda its value on Mos outside of Yerushalayim. The Paris therefore become Chulin, you're allowed to eat them anywhere. And the Mos, he brings up to Yerushalayim, he buys food in Yerushalayim, and he eats it b'kedushas Maaser Sheni. And when he's poda Maaser Sheni, he has to add a chomish. Now, if you buy peros in the marketplace from an Amoretz, the Rabbanan said you have to be mafrish, trumas and maisrus and Maaser Sheni, because we're afraid that maybe the Amoretz who sold it to you is not mafrish. And that's called Dmai. And before you are mafrish, you're not allowed to eat the peros, because the Rabbanan called it d'mai. On a deraisa level, there's no problem, because rov ami ha'aretz ma'asrin. Fine. So the Mishnah said ma'asrin b'd'mai. So I bought bread from an ami ha'aretz, and he's choshed that he wasn't mafrish ma'aser, and therefore I'm not allowed to eat this bread until I'm mafrish ma'aser. And the Gemara says, how could you be ma'ariv with Dmai? Dmai holo chazile. on a drabbana level at least, you're not allowed to eat d'may. So how could d'may be valid for an erev t'chumin? So the answer is migu de iboy mafkele nechosiv avi oni v'chazile hashtanami chazile. The halacha is that d'may is only asur to ashirim, but there's no isur d'may to aniyim. And the usher himself has the potential of becoming an oni. How so? He can be mafkir all his nechosin. Now he becomes an oni. Now, if that be the case, the man takes d'may, that's what it says in our Mishnah, and he uses it as an erev t'chumin. He was not mafkir his nechosin. And the Mishnah nevertheless is machadesh that the erev is valid. Why is the erev valid? Because he theoretically could become an oni. Okay. Now, we could ask the following question. What good is it that he could theoretically become an oni by being mafkir his nechassim? He's not being mafkir his nechassim. Now, if this Gemara reflects the Shita of the Chachamim of Sumchus, then I have no problem. Because the Chachamim of Sumchus say, as we learned last week, that if your Erev Tavshilin consists of, let's say, a Yayin Lenazir, or for that matter, Truma to a Zar, then it's a valid Erev Tchumin because somebody else could eat it. So the fact that an Oni could eat this D'may, from the Chachamim's perspective, that would fulfill all the requirements of Mazon Shtei Sudas and its Roy for somebody. If not for me, but for somebody else. But Sumchus holds that it's got to be Roy for me. Which means, in the case of Nazir, okay, he could be Shoal on his Nazirus. And therefore you could set aside an Erev Tchumen, even according to Sumchus, with Yayin Linoz. In the case of Truma Lazar, Sumchus disqualifies the Eruv because on Shabbos we don't separate Truma. There's an Isra Afrosha, and even if he would be Shoel on the Truma, it reverts back to the state of Teva, which is Osir, and the only possibility to be Matir would be through Afrosh, and we don't have that possibility on Shabbos. So now we have to ask ourselves the following. The Gemara's Kasha here of D'may Holo Chazile, if we assume that this Kasha is directed at Sumchus, because as far as the Rabbanan is concerned, what do you mean lo chazile? Who cares whether it's chazile? The Rabbanan never had this requirement of chazile. The Rabbanan just want to know if it's chazi to somebody in the veld. And certainly, the Gemara knows very well that my is chazila niyim. So the Rashba wants to suggest that maybe the Gemara is going according to the Rabbanan. But the Gemara didn't know, the Gemara was naive about the halach of aniyim, that d'may is mutal aniyim. The Gemara was unaware of that. And the Gemara was under the misimpression when it asked this kasha that d'may is asur l'chol adam afilu l'aniyim. So the kasha of the Gemara is according to the Chachamim of Sumchus, how could you be ma'ariv v'd'may? The other way of going here, And this is discussed in Tosfos, the Rashba. You'll see Tosfos di Ramaskel Dmai. Is that the Gemara is asking Dafka according to Sumchus. The Gemara knew very well that Dmai is Mutter Le'aniyim. And therefore that would satisfy the requirements according to the Chacham Shita of Erev Tchumen. But the Gemara was raising the objection according to Sumchus. Okay? So according to Sumchus, would we have a possibility of eating tamai. So what are you going to tell me? Well, the aniyim can eat tamai. That's not good enough for sumchas. I have to be able to eat tamai. Otherwise, I'm like the czar who was ma'ariv his erev with truma, which is an invalid erev according to sumchas. So here also, this should be an invalid erev. So the Gemara answers, well, he himself could have been mafkir his nechassin, and therefore he would be an ani, and he would be allowed to eat tamai. So what is the meaning of this answer? So let's suggest Rashi and the Meiri. Rashi says that the Chachamim were more mekel in tamai than in real teva. And the proof of the pudding is that Dmai was never prohibited to Aniyim. And the reason why the Rabbana would make kill as far as Aniyim is concerned is because they'd have to, you know, knock on doors and get the Amoritz, you know, to, to be, well, or they would have to be Mafresh Maser. So the Rabbana, in the case of an Ani, in order to spare him of the hassle of avoiding the Amei Aretz, you know, in order to buy from a chaver or having to go through the whole process of hafrosha, I mean, that's 10% right there. The Rabbanan said, you know, let's rely on the din d'oraisa, and that is that rov Amei Aretz ma'asrim him. So we'll rely on the fact that this Amei Aretz who sold you the peros, he belongs to the rope. Okay. The Meiri here, so again, the approach of Rashi seems to be, you know, to what extent did the Rabbana require Afrosha and consider the Dvai as if it was Tevel? To what extent did the Rabbana rely on the Torah and the Torah relies on Rov? And that's going to generate certain kulos here, that Sumchus himself could actually accept the theoretical possibility that he would be Mafkir's Nechos and he'd become an Oni. And that theoretical possibility is enough in the case of Demai to validate the Eruv, even according to Sumchus. The Meiri wants to take it a little bit, a step further. Excuse me. And the Meiri says that Mutar Lahafkir B'Shabbos. Now we know from the Gemara at the end of Beitzah that we don't allow Kinyonim on Shabbos. Comes along the Meiri, and he says that doesn't apply to Hefker. So let's say, for example, if you wanted to be Magdish Yonachosim on Shabbos and make them all Hegdish, that's prohibited on Shabbos. That's a Shavuos. But that's because you're transferring your ownership to the Hegdish. But in the case of Hefker, you're not transferring ownership, you're just removing your ownership, and therefore you're allowed to be Mafkir your fields on Shabbos. So just like we said in the case of a Nazir, that he could theoretically be Shoel on his Nazirus, and that would be permitted on Shabbos, therefore the Erev is valid, the Yayin for a Nazir. Mashenkein, in the case of Truma Lazar, which is really, we'll call it Tevel, because he could be Shoel on his Hafrashas Truma. But when it reverts back to the state of Tevel, he cannot be Mafrish on Shabbos. There's no Hafrash on Shabbos. But in the case of Hefker, here we have the possibility of being Mafkir. We don't have to demand that he's Mafkir as Nechassim, but we know that it's permitted to do so. So that when that theoretical possibility could be actualized, and the potential for him to become an Ani and therefore eat the d'may is a real possibility, so then Sumchus would allow and validate the eruv. However, in the footnote here, he quotes the Shar HaMelech. Pretty sure I have it somewhere, but go find it. Anyway, so the Shar HaMelech is a super commentary on the Rambam, and he writes that it's also to be mafkir v'shabbos. He seems to be totally unaware of the Me'iri. Most of the Chachmei Yisrael were unaware of the Me'iri until the 20th century. But be that as it may, it's also to be mafkir on Shabbos. Excuse me for 1 minute. Again, just to reiterate, the Gemara now works out according to Sumchus if you don't like the Me'iri, but if you don't like the Shar HaMelech, you're really in deep trouble here, because the Shar HaMelech writes that it's also to be mafkir yonachasim on Shabbos. So this theoretical possibility of making of the usher becoming an ani and therefore allowing him to eat the dmai is not a real possibility. So he writes that divrei agmara kan sheyochol hafkir nechosav hainu bebeina shmoshos shuzman knias ha'eruv ukerebi hasover shelo gozru al hashvus beina shmoshos. Wow. I have to tell you, not just brilliance here, but also his knowledge. It's like encyclopedic. The Shar HaMelech says that this sugya can only be interpreted in the light of Rebbe Shita, and we have to add and combine, shall we say, two premises. What are these two premises? Premise number one is that the Eruv depends upon the moment of Beina Shmoshos. That's when the Eruv is activated. So in theory, if you would have an Isur that is only Chal after Beina Shmoshos, but at the moment of Beina Shmoshos, it's Mutter, then the Eruv would be valid. Why? Because the moment, no, it's frozen in time. You know, the moment that everything engraves, you know, is engraved in stone is the moment of Beina Shmoshos. So even if at the end of Beina Shmoshos becomes Asur, if it was Mutter at the moment of Beina Shmoshos, the Erev is valid. And once the Erev is valid, you're set to go. You're good to go. Now, premise number two is the Shita of Rebbe. Rebbe's Shita is that Kol Masha Gozru Chachamim Mishum Shvus Lo Gozru V'Beina Shmoshos. Beina Shmoshos has a unique status. Again, I don't know what to call it. You call it a Safek, call it a Drabbanan, I don't know what you want to call it. And Rebbe holds that Shvusim that were enacted by the Chachamim go into effect after Beina Shmoshos, but not during Beina Shmoshos. It's kind of like a similar, I don't want to compare it to Gzeirah L'Gzeirah, right? Because Beina Shmoshos itself is only Drabbanon, and then you're adding an Iser Hefker, which is only Drabbanon, so that doesn't apply in Beina Shmoshos. So the Shar HaMelech says that that's how we're going to have to explain this Gemara, that even though on Shabbos you're not allowed to be Mafkir Yenachasim, so how the heck is he going to become an Ani and allow you to eat this Dmai? The only answer is, If we assume A, that the Erev depends upon that moment of Beina Shmoshos, and B, we assume like Rebbe that there's no Gzeira or Shvus of being Mafkir Yenachasim on Beina Shmoshos, hence this possibility is a real possibility. Now we turn to Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis, the Eshach Sanya Tmai. So what happened is that the battalions of soldiers of the Malchus would show up in a city, a Jewish city, and the government required that the members of the city would have to provide them with food. And let's assume, for argument's sake, that we have a situation of Malchei Yisrael, right? The government is a Jewish government. And the Jewish government requires that you feed the chayalim in your local area. So the halacha is that within the context of the responsibility of the bnei ha-machuzah, the city dwellers, to supply the soldiers with food, they're allowed to give them tamai, and the chayalim are allowed to eat tamai. So it means that the chayalim are going from city to city, and they're like an ani. They don't have the, you know, mother's home cooking. Anyway, so they don't have mother's home cooking anymore. So they're on the run from city to city. They're in their uniforms, and we're allowed to eat tamai. So we can feed them tamai, and they're allowed to eat tamai. They have the status similar to aniyim. And by the way, you can check in halacha. I didn't get a chance. What would be the deal with someone who's rich, but he's moving from city to city, and he has very limited supplies? I would guess that he's called an ani. Again, for that moment in time, he's like the chayal. When the chayal gets home, he's not allowed to eat tamai. But when he's on the run, his status is that of an ani. Omar Rav Huna, Tana, we learned in a brisa, this whole business about feeding tamai to an ani is a machlokas beis hil beit shammai. Beit shammai omrim ein machilin es aniyim tamai, u beis hil omrim machilin es aniyim tamai. We're going to assume that our Mishnah reflects the shita of beis hil. We always pass like beis hil. And the aniyim are allowed to eat tamai. Now, the reason why Rav Huna quotes his brisa is just to tell us that this is another case of a stam mishnah kibbeis hillel. When it says machilin, when it says ma'arvin b'tmai, that's a stam mishnah, but you should know, that's Rav Huna wants for our edification, that mishnah would not be acceptable according to Beit Shammai. Then the mishnah says ma'isa rishon shenitla trumasa. That's a valid eruv. Well, guess what? If it's Maisa Rishon, and the Truma was taken off the Masa, then it's Chulin Gomer, Pshita. I mean, why would I even think that you can't be Ma'ariv with Chulin? I mean, this is what you use for an Erev, right? Lo Tzricha, what's the case in the Mishnah? Shek Dimo Bishibolim. Okay, so now we have two cases that are similar but fundamentally different. One is called Hikdima B'Shibolim, and the other is called Hikdima B'Kri. Now, what's common to both of these cases? The Yisrael, the Baal Bayis, after he reaps, he harvests his field, and now he should be Chayav in Shumas and Maisrus, right? The answer is no. He's not yet Chayav in Shumas and Maisrus. Harvesting is not enough. He needs what's called kri, chaf reish yud. So the stage before kri is called shibolim. Shibolim means he's got kernels of grains. Okay. At what point does this tvua become tevel and it's chayv and masir? First, he takes the grains and he winnows them. That's called Zoreh. Right? Zayin Vav Resh Hay. And after he winnows them and the wind blows away the chaff, now he's left with heaps of grains. Those heaps of grains are called Kri. And at that moment in time, he's Chayav in Trumas and Maisrus. Now here's the deal. Instead of the Baal Bayis doing what he had to do, which means in the Seder HaFrosh he should have first designated, let's call it the 2% for the Kohen, that's called Truma, and then from the balance, let's say he's left with 98%, he takes off 10% of 98% and gives it to the Levi. Instead he skipped a step, and he took from his entire field 10% and he gave it to the Levi as Maser. And now the question is, when did he do this? Was it Hikdimo B'Shibolim or was it Hikdimo B'Kri? So let's go through the two cases. Case number one is Ikdimo b'shibolin. Right now, all he has is natural kernels of grains. He has not yet processed them to the point of digun. Digun means when they become dogon. The Torah says that Yechayev in Trumas and Maisus from dogon. Dogon means after digun. Digun means winnowing. And now he, so to speak, circumvents Truma. He sideswipes the coin. Why? Because he gives Meiser to the Ani, I'm sorry, to the Levi, before his Hafrashas Truma. That's called Hikdimo B'Shibolet. Now, the Torah says that he's got to give Truma. And only after he removes Truma and he's left with 98%, then he gives Maaser. In effect, the Levi has gotten more Maaser than is coming to him, and the Kohen is sort of, usurped. He's cheated of his Truma. So what happens now? The halacha is that nitla mimenu trumas maser velo nitla mimenu truma gedola, the Levi is now holding on to maser, and that maser is teva until he gives trumas maser. All right, he gives trumas maser. Let's say he takes 10% of his maser and he gives it to the kohen. But what about the truma gedola? The kohen has been cheated out of his truma gedola, that 2% of the Baal HaBayis's peiros. And the Mishnah wants to tell us that in this case, because he was Magdim B'Shibolim, and the Levi received his Maser before the official kickoff of the Chi of Trumas and Masers, it was only Shibolim, it was before it became a Kri, therefore, you can make an Eruv out of the Maser of the Levi, once the Levi gave Truma's Maser, despite the fact that the Kohen has been cheated out of his Truma. And that reflects on, or depends upon, the Shita of Rabbi Avo. Kid Rabbi Omer Reish Lakish, the Omer Avo, Rabbi Avo, Omer Reish Lakish, Maser Rishon Sheik Dima Vishibolim, Potem mi Truma Gedola. The Levi is not obligated in Truma Gedola. If he had been, then the status of his maser would be that of Tevel, and for sure it would be invalid for an Eruv. But we're going now according to Rabbi Avo. Shenemar, how did Rabbi Avo derive this conclusion that Maser Ishik Bil Shibolim is potter from Truma Gedola, not from Truma's maser, but from Truma Gedola? Shenemar, in the parish of Maser Ishik, it says, I'll read the whole pasuk to you, it says, V'el ha'levim t'daber v'yamart aleihem, ki sikhu me'es b'nei Yisrael's maser, asher nasati lachem, me'itom menachaschem. And now it says, V'harei mosem mimenu trumas Hashem, maser min ha'maser. You have to take your maser, Mr. Levi, and give a maser from your maser. But that's all you have to give. Maser min ha'maser, amarti lecha, I obligated you to be mafrish a maser min a maser, and you give the kohen his due. Velo truma gedola utrumas maser min a maser. The Levi, under no circumstances, is obligated to give two different gifts, two different categories of truma to the kohen. One and not two. In the Havavi, we would have said he has to give two gifts of truma to the kohen. One truma that the Kohen had rights to by virtue of the Baal HaBayis, who was Makdim B'Shibolim, and he never gave the Kohen his due of 2%, and another Truma, which is Truma's Maser, that's explicit in the Pasuk. No, the Torah goes out of its way to say that you're only Chayav in Truma's Maser, Mr. Levi, but you're not Chayav in Truma Gedol. If the Kohen has a claim, he goes back to the Baal HaBayis and he'll say, wait a minute, where's the Truma? You never gave me Truma. Then we get into the whole sugi of what's called Makire Kahuna, like you've always given me your Truma, so why don't you give me your Truma now, and so forth and so on. But as far as the Levi is concerned, right, the Levi's Maser Rishon Shenitla Trumaso in our Mishnah, and therefore the Erev is valid, is Nitla Trumas Maser, but Velo Nitra Truma Gedola, and our Mishnah reflects the Shita Rabbi Avo, that Ekdimo B'Shibolim, the Levi does not have to give Truma that was, you know, the Truma to the Kohen that was, the Kohen was cheated of by virtue of the Balabais. So Gemara asks the following Kash. Omale Rav Popola Baye. If the Torah is telling the Levi that he's only chayav in one hafrush of truma that's called trumas maaser, then afilu ikdimo bikri nami. Why does Rabbi Avo give us a less of a chiddush when he should have given us more than a chiddush? What if the Baal HaBayis had not only harvested his wheat, but developing the process, he winnowed the wheat, then he piled it up in a kri, and then it's tevel gomer doraisa. Well, and now, instead of giving the Kohen his 2%, he gave the Levi a 10% gift. The Levi is not going to be chayev in truma gedola based on Rabbi Avo's interpretation of the pasuk, that the pasuk says that I was only mechayev the Levi one truma, not two trumas. So why did Rabbi Avo tell me in the bigger chiddush, even if this kohen was cheated by the Baal HaBayis after the tvua reached the stage of kri, which is the ultimate stage as far as generating an isa tevel and a chi of trumas and maisers, nevertheless the Levi is not responsible. The Levi doesn't have any responsibility on his shoulders to give and guarantee that the Kohen gets his Truma Gedola. That's not my fight. I'm a Levi, right? I'm not a Levi, but saying if I will. That's a battle between the Baal HaBayis and the Kohen. Let the Kohen sue the Baal HaBayis in a court of law. But the Levi himself should be off the hook, because the Torah says a Levi only has to give one Truma, not two Truma. Amalei, Abai says to Rav Papa, Olecha Amakra. The Torah tells us in the same parsha, right? This is very familiar to us, Bamidbar Perek Yudches, that we read so recently. Mikol Masro Sechem Tarimu Eskol Trumas Hashem. The Torah addresses the Levi and tells the Levi not only that you have to be Mafrish Trumas Maser, but it adds the word Kol. Mikol Masro Sechem. And the word kol is always a ribui. And that ribui is coming to include a case where the Levi has to give two different gifts to the Kohen. One gift which he always has to give, which is called Trumas Masir. And in a certain scenario, he has to give another Truma to the Kohen. And that's Truma Gedola, because the Baal HaBayis did not give Truma Gedola. He was Makdim Lekri. So the Torah says that in this case of Hayekdimo Bekri, where the Kohen had full-fledged rights to the Truma before the Yisroel was Mafresh Maser, the Levi now has to give two Trumos. In addition to his Truma's Maser, he has to give Truma Gedola. The Rav Papa is not a happy camper over here, because on the one hand you had a mute that excluded Truma Gedola in the case of a Kohen of a Levi who got Truma's Maser, who received his Maser. And then you have a ribui of Kol Maser Sechem to include the case of Ekdimo Bekri. Ma Rois, meaning you have these two psukim that contradict each other. You can interpret one pasuk of a miut in the case of Ekdimo Bishibolim, and you can take the other pasuk, Mikol Maser Sechem, which is a ribui, and interpret as Ekdimo Bekri. Ma Rois. Well, what did you see that I didn't see, that you matched it up in that way? So Gemara answers, Hayidgan v'haylo idgan. Does the Kohen have rights that are inherent in these peros, in the Tvua? It depends if it's idgan or not idgan. The Torah says, Reishis d'gancha. When the Torah speaks about the Chiv Truma, it's called Reishis d'gancha. At what point are you chayev in Truma? when it's digoncha. Digoncha means digun. Digun means after you winnow it and you pile it up in a kri, then it becomes tevel doraisa, and at that point you have to give the kohen his due. Now, instead of doing so, you cut out the kohen, you gave the levi his maser. Ah, in such a case, mikol maser seichem tarimu es trumas Hashem. There's an extra ribui that the levi now becomes responsible to make sure that the kohen gets what's due to him, namely truma gedola. And the levi now has to be mafresh in addition to his trumas maser, truma gedola. And that's because in the hands of the Baal HaBayis, the tvuah had already reached the stage of digun. Mashenken, in the case of hikdimo b'shibolim, there the Baal HaBayis gave the levi his 10% before the tvuah reached the stage of digun, and therefore there was never a full-fledged chiyuv trumas amasros vis-a-vis the kohen. The Baal HaBayis did not have to give the kohen his truma, and therefore if he didn't have to give the kohen his truma, he didn't have a chiyuv yet, it's not the gancha, then there's no isur tevel. And it's no Issa Tevel, we're going to say that the levi is not responsible to fork over Truma Gedola to the Kohen. Next, B'maisa Sheni V'Hekdesh Shenifdu Pshita. I mean, after you were Mafrish, after you were Poda Masa Sheni, or Hekdesh, it's Chulin Gomor. So, of course, you could use it for an Eruv. Lo Tzricha The Torah requires that after you do pidyon on your maser sheni, you have to add another 20%. So you have 100, and you were poded on 100, but you were obligated to be poded on 120. You didn't add that extra chomesh. Is therefore, I would have thought in such a case, The Baal HaBayis has not effectuated, has not achieved his pidyon. The pidyon is invalid because the chomesh is absolutely critical in the pidyon. Chomash malon, diena chomesh mi'akev. That chomesh is not the chiyuv of pidyon. It's a separate chovas gavra, meaning it's almost like if I come into a money changer and he does a service for me, I have to pay him a service charge. The actual change that he gives me for, let's say I give him 100 and he gives me 10 tens, I don't have to add anything to that. He charges me a service charge. Same thing as with pidyon hekdesh, if I could use that as a metaphor. The pidyon hekdesh itself could be accomplished shavah b'shavah, 100%. We don't need another 20%. But you have a separate chovas gavra. You have a chiyuv of paying Hegdesh a service charge because they were willing to give up on the payrolls for you. And that's not ma'akiv in the pidyon itself. The pidyon itself is valid, and the payrolls are chul and gemurim. Then mutar b'achila, even if he hasn't yet paid the chomesh. And therefore it's valid as an eruv. Avalobiteva. The Mishnah tells us that once the Peros have reached the state of Tevel, which is an Isur Misa Bidei Shamayim, then the Erev is invalid. So Gemara says, Peshitta, once again, we know that you cannot set up an Erev of Mazon Shtei Sudos with something that's not Roy Lachila. So Tevel is certainly not Roy Lachila. He says, no, B'Tevel HaTovel Midrabanon. We have two categories of Tevel. We have Tevel Doraisa and Tevel Drabanon. And it all hinges on what's called Gidule Karka. The Torah obligates you in Trumas and Maestros from that which grows from the ground. You can have something that grows from the ground, but it's not inside the ground. And that fits into two categories of an Otzitz. Otzitz means a flower pot. So you can have an Otzitz Nakuv, and it's perforated on the bottom, and therefore it sucks up the nutrients from the ground. That's called gidule karka, and that would be tevel doraisa until you mafresh trum anything that grows inside that vase. But you could have also an atzitz she'eno nakuv, which is a flower pot that's absolutely solid and flat on the bottom. There are no openings. And although there is some relationship of transfer of nutrients from the ground into the otzitz, but nevertheless, the otzitz is not part of the karka. And on a deraisa level, therefore, the fruits growing inside this otzitz are not chayiv in trumas and maisros. But the Rabbanan said they are chayiv in trumas and maisros. The Rabbanan were always afraid that if we're too lenient in an otzitz she'eno nakuv, tomorrow or next week you're going to be making an otzitz nakuv. But that tevel in an otzitz she'eno nakuv is only the Rabbanan. And you might think that for the sake of an eruv, there's no problem in something that is awesome and abundant since it's mutam in HaTorah. And the Mishnah wants to tell us, no, that in order to have a valid eruv, it's got to be something that you're allowed to eat. And if you're enjoined from eating it on a drabbanan level, like tevel drabbanan in this case of an otzitz, that's also a posel, and that invalidates the eruv. Now, I just want to comment here that I think the Shar HaMelech is going to be in trouble here. What do I mean? The Shar HaMelech had two premises. One premise was that the Erev depends upon Bein HaShmoshos. The other premise was that we're going like Rebbe, who holds that the Isur D'Rabbanan does not apply in Bein HaShmoshos, of Hafrosha, let's say. So what's the problem here with this Tevel? I mean, I could ask this question even about Tevel Doraisa, but certainly in Tevel Derabbanan. You're telling me that I'm not allowed to eat this on Shabbos, and therefore cannot serve as an Erev. Well, let's look at this Tevel as we enter into Shabbos, Bein HaShmoshos, because that's the critical moment according to Shara Melech. And could I be Mafrish Bein HaShmoshos? According to Rebbe, yes. So what's the problem with this Erev? And we have no choice but to assume that this sugya of Tevel reflects the Shita of the Chachamim against Rebbe, and they hold that Kol Masha Osru Chachamim Osru B'Bein HaShmoshos against Rebbe. But then it becomes very choppy, because when the Mishnah speaks about Dmai, and we say that he could be Mafkir is Nechosim, says the Shah Melech, even though Hefker is also on Shabbos, but on Bein HaShmoshos, we're going to allow it based on Rebbe, so that the entire premise that underlies validating the Dmai Eruv is Rebbe. But now we say that Tevel is an invalid Eruv, and we're going to have to, whether we like it or not, we're going to have to introduce the Rabbanan sheet of Rebbe. So that's a little bit choppy. So I don't know what the Shara Melech is going to say about that. Going on. V'lo b'maisa rishon shalo nitra trumaso. Pshita. Right? There are two dinim of Tevel. There's Tevel in the hands of the Balabayas, if he hasn't been mafrish trumas of maisers. And then there's Tevel in the maiser sheni that was in maiser rishon that was given to the Levi, because he's chayav in trumas maser. So that's Tevel. Lo tzricha shekdimo b'kri. The case is where the Levi received his maser without the balabayas being mafresh first, truma, and the tvua reached already the stage of kri. So we have now nitla mimeni truma spice lo nitla mimeni truma gedola. We said that we had a ribui of kol that taught me that there's one scenario in which the Levi has to give a double truma. He's got to give trumas maser, classic, and he has to add another truma of truma gedola because the balabayas never was mafresh truma gedola. And let's assume that the Levi was mafresh trumas maser, but he hasn't been mafresh truma gedola, which he's obligated to do in the case of Ikdimo Bakri. Mao de Tema, if not for our Mishnah, I would have said Kinomale Rav Popla Abaye. Like Rav Popla argued to Abaye, once you have that mute, that teaches me that the Levi is only chayv in one maser, and not in one truma, and not in two trumas. Therefore, the Levi is exempt from truma gedola. Kamash malon kineshani lei. As Abaye answered, he retorted to Rav Popla that we have another ribui of kol maser seichem, and therefore the Levi is obligated not only in Shumas Masa, but also in Shuma Gedola. If he hasn't yet been mafrid Shuma Gedola, he cannot use that food as an Erev, because it's Eino Roy Lachila, and it's Asur as Tevel, because it was Ikdimo Bikri. The Lobe Masa Sheni Shalom Niftu, Masa Sheni before Pidgeon, the Gemara says, Pishita. You know, you're outside Yerushalayim, and you're not allowed to eat this fruit, because the Torah commands you to take it to Yerushalayim. Lo sucha lechol b'sharecha is a separate law that enjoins you from eating Maaser Sheni outside Yerushalayim. What would have entertained my mind is a havamina that this Erev could be valid. Lo tzricha shepada'an, but lo pada'an kehilchasa. He was poed his Maaser Sheni, but he didn't do a very good job. He did try to fudge it through. And the Gemara now introduces a concept called Asimon. You know, if you date yourself back to Israel, you may remember the Asimonim. Yeah. So the Asimon of the Talmud, which maybe is somewhat similar to our Asimonim, is a piece of metal the size of a coin, but it hasn't yet been minted. In other words, the government has not yet put the seal on it. And it's not legal tender. It has a certain value to it because it's a piece of metal. The government will certainly buy it up because they want to put the mint on it, you know, put the picture of the king on it. But it's not called kesef. And when the Torah says to be poda maaser sheni, Rachmana Omar, v'tzarta kesef biyadecha. Now, on a simple level, literally, tzarta means to wrap it up. You know, you get yourself a kerchief, you wrap up the coins after the pidgin, and you go up to Yerushalayim and you buy food in Yerushalayim and eat it. But al pitor sheval peh, the word v'tzarta conveys a deeper message. And what is that? Kesef sheyesh alav tzura. It's not just an object of value. You can't be poda maaser sheni on anything except for kesef. And the Torah says that kesef has to be described as vitzarto, which means it has to have a tzura. It's legal tender. Kesef sheyesh alav tzura. Hegdei shechil al gabi karka. What was the case of chil hegdeish? That he was poda hegdish, but not kilchasa, not the right way. He used karka. And he said that this cow of hegdish, its hegdish status should be transferred over to a piece of karka. Rachmana omar v'nosan ha-kesef v'komlo. The Torah says that the magdish, if he wants to be poda the hegdish, he's got to do it in a way of v'nosan ha-kesef v'komlo. And that's what he has to use for pidgin mas, pidgin hegdesh. And karka just won't do, because karka doesn't fit the description of v'nosan ha-kesef v'kom. And that leads us to the next Mishnah, which is here on Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis. And this is the mitzvah of shlichus. So let's just give two introductions. Introduction number one is that an Erev Tchumen, with all the respect to all the black Gemara we've learned about Mazon Shtei Sudos, Erev Tchumen does not require Mazon Shtei Sudos. If I take a little bit of a trek outside the city limits on Erev Shabbos, and I land in a certain point, I could be Konish Shvisa at that point. I don't have to put any food down. And that sets up my tchum, that gives me radius of 2,000 amma from that point in every single direction. The Rabbanu wanted to make it a little easier for us, and they offered us a second possibility, and that's called Mazon Shtei Sudos. Now, how does that make life easier for the person who's putting down the Eruv? That's called Shlichus. In the first case, which is the Iker Eruv, the main original Eruv, means I have to personally walk out 2,000 amma if I want to set that up as my Mokom Shvisa. No Shliach will do. But now the Rabbanu made it easier for me. I don't have to schlep out all the way to that point that's 2,000 amma beyond the outer boundary of the city. I can send you as my Shliach, and you'll take the food from my hand, so to speak, and you'll put it there. You'll lay it down there. I can even pay you for that. You can be my employee. You might have to wear a mask, but you can do it for me. You're my Shliach. And you go out there and put down the Mazon Shtei Sudos. However, as we're going to learn in this Mishnah, I think we'll leave it for tomorrow, it's a whole new sugya, there's what's called Toras Shlichus. Now, Toras Shlichus means that there's an entire parasha in the Torah that gives us rules and regulations for how Shlichus operates, when it operates. It's a mashal amad dover, like a notary public, right? So if the notary public is representing you, you know, he's got to have an official recognition, and he has to have a stempel, and this, that, and the other thing. So one of the requirements for shlichus is you have to be a bar das, to the exclusion of a cheresh shota v'katan. However, there are two stages in setting up an Erev Tchumen with Mazon Shtei Sudos. Stage number one is to get somebody to carry the Mazon Shtei Sudos. Stage number two is that first person now gives it over to a second person who now represents the Balabayas and his Kona Shvisa. And the issue that we want to address tomorrow, Mirz Hashem, is could the Chere Shota V'Katan serve in the capacity of what I call Hakofa Aleph? They will not be Kona Shvisa, for then I need a Bardas, a Gadol, a Pikeah. But what they could do, possibly, is to transfer the Shtei Sudos over to a Bardas, over to a Gadol, and he will be Kona Shvisa on my behalf. The only problem is that there are two issues with regard to Cheresh Shota V'Katan. One is that he's not your extended representative, he's not your shliach. But number two, he doesn't have Nemanus, which means that we don't rely on his word. So let's say in a case where I give my Mazon Shtei Sudos to a Katan, he's 10 years old, Lama Zogin, he passes on my Eruv to a bar mitzvah boy who's going to be Kona Shvisa out there 2,000 amma. But the problem is that how do I know to rely on such an Eruv on Shabbos? Do I know for sure that this Katan that I asked to do me this favor and deliver this Eruv, you know, this Tishtei Sudos, did he actually live up to his obligation? He's only a Katan. And if he comes back to me, he says, Dad, I took care of it for you. We don't trust the Katan. The Halacha doesn't trust the Katan. It's nothing against the Katan. He could be the Vilna Gaon. He knows Shas by heart at six. But he still is a Katan. Now, even if we solve that problem, let's say I could see the Katan at a distance, delivering the Eruv to a Gadol, how do I know the Gadol fulfilled his Shlichus? And that's going to take us into a whole sugi which is called Chazaka Shliach Osa Shlichuso. So, b'li neder, tomorrow we'll start the sugya of Shlichus. Before we end the Shia, I just want to add one word from the Rambam in Pirush HaMishmaos in Dmai about Otzitz
Nakuv, which is called Mechubila Oretz, and has the same status as Oretz, and therefore it's Chayev and Mais. So the Rambam says that we derive this from the Pasuk Aser Taser, Eskol Tvuas Zaracha Hayotze Hasode. So from the extra words Hayotze Hasode, the Rambam derives even an Otzitz. Again, Otzitz means an Otzitz Nakuv. Our discussion was about an Otzitz She'en Nakuv, which is only Tevel Derabbanan. And Rashi says that Truma Hoyseruili Notel Meatvua Od Kodim Shahufresh Mimenu Maser. That in the case of Hikdimo of Hikdimo Bakri, Rashi points out it, which is very clear, that this Truma was really Notel before he separated Maser and gave Maser to the Levi. Anyway, we didn't solve the problem of the pidgin and why the Iser pidgin or the Iser of Hafrashim should be chal as an Iser Drabbanon on Bein Hashmashos. That problem still remains outstanding, unless we assume like the Chachamim that Kol Mashal Asu Chacham Mishum Shvus Asu Bein. Okay, then, so we'll start Belina the Mishnah here in the second, or let's call it the last third on Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis.